The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Well, about an hour ago, if people were listening, we were talking about epilepsy. We spoke to Mia Sherwood-Scully, and she has temporal lobe epilepsy. And John Verling was with me as well. He's the father of Freddie, who has a more severe form. It's called Dravet syndrome. Freddie can have up to 19 seizures in a day. Joining me now to talk about all of this is Colin Doherty. He's a consultant neurologist and a professor of neurology in Trinity College. Colin, I mean, there's so much to talk about here. And I should say, really, that people, if they missed the conversation we had earlier, it's up as a podcast, and they should listen back to it, to Mia and to John, who were with me, or to Mia and John, who were with me. But a question I didn't ask them, because I knew you were coming along, is the obvious one to start with. What exactly is epilepsy?
That's a good question. Epilepsy is really a group of disorders. It's not just one. Those of us in the field talk about the epilepsies. There's approximately 40 different types, which is a surprise to most people. It affects people of all ages, all sexes and all races. And it's much more common than you would think. It affects probably about 1 in 100 people. So you're looking at about 50,000 people across the island of Ireland who probably have the disorder. So, yeah, it's a very big deal for most people's lives. And about a third of the people who have the condition are not fully controlled on the medication that we prescribe for them. So they present a huge problem scientifically, but also personally and humanly for people living with the disorder.
Might there be people living with it who go their whole lives without a diagnosis?
That's probably unusual in Ireland. Certainly around the world, there are many communities with people with epilepsy that haven't got a diagnosis. But I think if people, unless people are very, very mildly affected, they more than likely do have a diagnosis. That doesn't mean they're on the right treatment, and it doesn't mean that they're controlled, but at least the diagnosis is the first step.
We got a sense from the stories we heard earlier, John talking about his son Freddie, who has Dravet syndrome, and then Mia, who was talking about her own temporal lobe epilepsy, and that they were affected in profoundly different ways. So I assume you talked about a kind of the epilepsies and 40 odd different conditions that fall within that. There's massive diversity of symptoms, is there?
Yeah, I mean, to give you an example, so Dravet syndrome, which affected one of your guests, is typically something that presents at infancy within the first year of life. And it has terrible, terrible seizures, which happen on an almost daily basis, sometimes multiple times per day. So that's one sort of side of the spectrum. And then you will have an 80-year-old woman who had a stroke a couple of years ago, who then developed seizures as a result of the stroke. And you can imagine you're talking about two completely different types of individual, and that is the diversity and everything in between. As I said, all ages, all sexes, and all levels of difficulty in management.
How easy or otherwise is it to diagnose? Are there kind of markers that are very clear and distinct that you can look for and identify, or can it be difficult?
That's a very good question. I mean, we're just finishing off a piece of research in the university here where we looked at how good we are at diagnosing us. So we took consecutive people coming into the emergency room with seizures. Some of them, half of them had never had a seizure before. So they come in. And remember, the person who has the seizure is often not the best witness because it's happened to them. They may be found on the street in a state of unconsciousness. And then there may be no witnesses. And while we do have tools, like we have brain scan imaging, and actually, it can be very difficult, and around the world, we get this wrong about 20% of the time, which is kind of a remarkably high figure. And we know this because we've followed patients from the point of admission to hospital and then up to a year later, and there's still, even a year after the very first seizure, there's still a small group, probably about 5%, whom the diagnosis still remains elusive. So making the diagnosis is not straightforward, and we are desperately in search of what we call biomarkers. You know, diagnostic, you know, like a blood test that you would get, say, diagnosis of COVID was based on the PCR test. We don't have such a reliable test in epilepsy yet.
And is that where the body of research is kind of happening at the moment, the main body of research?
Oh, God, there are many, many different branches. Yes, the diagnostic tools, they're definitely an area of interest. But there's a huge amount of work being gone into new therapies, trying to understand how do we actually deliver care. So if Dravet, for instance, is a classic example of a very, very difficult to control condition. We know there's a gene abnormality. We know that this gene is what we call autosomal dominant, which means that if somebody passes on this gene, about 50% of their offspring will get the disease. So there's a lot of real interest now in going to the heart of this and using these, I'm sure you've talked about it before, gene editing techniques to replace the abnormal gene. I think that's the future. I think it looks bright. There are some very good people in Ireland who are at the cutting edge of this, people working in Beaumont Hospital in Future Neuro, who are looking at trying to get a hold of these gene editing tools. So I think the future is bright. At the moment, there are some new treatments that are available for Dravet's, which have been much better than the older treatments. So we continue to make progress. But if you're there suffering from, if you're watching your child have multiple seizures in one day, it can't come fast enough, I would say, suggest.
Yeah, because John was talking about that, you know, his son Freddie still has those seizures clustered. He might go a week without them, but then he gets them and he'd have multiple seizures, and it can be terrifying for him and his wife. As you say, Freddie kind of isn't necessarily aware while it's happening or doesn't experience it the same way they do watching it. And if anybody is just tuning in now and missed it, I'd recommend listening back. We have it up as a podcast already, that conversation. But he talked as well, and Mia talked about this as well, about the slight period of trial and error when it came to medication as well, that they had to go through, try to work out what works. And that's not specific to epilepsy. You see that with other conditions as well. The other thing they talked about was the efficacy of a drug maybe over time wearing off. Is that an issue?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that happens. I would argue, though, that for most patients, if you're lucky enough to hit the right drug initially, you often get very long-term control from it. But you're right that the problem with some of these, particularly these genetic forms of epilepsy, is, you know, you have to often go through a lot of trial and error to find the drug. And of course, none of these drugs are without side effects. And so people, they not only have to put up with having the seizure, but they have to put up with the side effects of the medication that they're taking. And they can be life-changing even in and of itself. Just forget about the seizures. Just having to take medication every day, if you can imagine how it takes the edge off your concentration, your memory, your thinking. There are so many people who are trying to get through normal life, work, school. I mean, these are what we call the indirect costs of epilepsy. I mean, the direct costs are the hospital costs and the drug costs, but the indirect costs of epilepsy are massive. They cause a huge burden for the families who have it and on the society that has people who are, you know, not able to perform the potential they have to perform. So there's a huge, huge problem with this. And, you know, we're all lining up, knocking on the door of government to get more and more funding. But I think epilepsy is kind of interesting because it often is dealing with a long-term stigma associated with it. I mean, people are happier to talk about their asthma or their diabetes, but people don't run up to tell you they have epilepsy. And, I can tell you there's a very, very complex story there. Going back to, you know, the history of medicine, where epilepsy was conflated often with mental illness and with, you know, demonic possession. People thought people having seizures were possessed. So we are dealing with that stigma, believe it or not, in this day and age, still people having difficulty. You know, for instance, I don't think you could say a modern, say, celebrity who has epilepsy, or a modern footballer or a modern rugby player, because those people won't talk about it. And so it's very hard in that environment to try and make progress, because from a political point of view, you know, they just don't see it. People don't see this condition because people aren't talking about it.
That's interesting. It's interesting. And when you talk about the indirect costs as well, you know, what struck me as soon as you said it was the indirect emotional and mental burden on families as well. And the people with epilepsy that, you know, you don't necessarily think of, because Mia described it as well. Just the idea that you and I could take it for granted. You go for a walk in the woods on your own. And she was like, well, there was a period of time after the first seizure when she, you know, had a full seizure where she wouldn't go anywhere alone. She was just absolutely terrified that if something happened, if something happening to me and you walking in the woods as we twist an ankle, something happening to her is I have a seizure and there's nobody around.
Yeah. I mean, I would hazard to say, and I'm sure some of my colleagues might feel different about this, but I actually believe that the effects of epilepsy, of the diagnosis, and the sort of the lack of confidence that one develops in life, these are much more meaningful actually than the seizures themselves. I mean, at a certain point, when you're having the amount of seizures that people with Dravet's have, yes, it's you're really worried about survival, but there's a raw survival issue there. But for the vast majority of people with epilepsy, it's that impact that the condition has on your ability to see into the future and to consider yourself an independent person, citizen living in the country, fending for yourself. Just so many people have to put that off to try and deal with all of the mental and physical aspects of this disorder. And I think we constantly have a battle on our hands to bring epilepsy and its effects into the public consciousness. I mean, for instance, the Epilepsy Ireland, which is a very, very fantastic advocacy organisation for epilepsy. It's one of the oldest in Europe, actually. It came about in 1966. But they did a survey at one point. They found about half the people surveyed thought that epilepsy was a contagious disease. They thought it was an infective disease of some sort. Hmm. But there's a massive job to be done in bringing to light this condition so that, you know, ordinary people who suffer from it can feel happy and confident talking about it in the first and foremost to their employers. For instance, people ask me, you know, oh, about epilepsy now, do I tell my employer? I said, look, and unless you absolutely have to tell your employer, I wouldn't be telling them. There's so much ignorance about the effect of the disorder that people are, you know, routinely rejected for roles in society because of just the mere diagnosis. It doesn't matter that they haven't had a seizure in 5 years, they're well controlled on their medication. Just the very fact of having a diagnosis puts them at a disadvantage.
Well, listen, as I said, if you're just joining us now and you missed it earlier, John and Mia were with me after 5 o'clock and it's up as a podcast and well worth the listen. Colin, thanks a million for speaking to us.
Not at all. Thank you.
Yeah, Colin is Colin Doherty, the consultant neurologist and professor of neurology in Trinity College at Dublin. Joe in County Offaly says, I have epilepsy for 30 years, no episodes since 97 and I'm on medication. I'm 72. And Aoife, who's in Tremor in County Waterford, says, I was diagnosed when I was 18 during my first year of college. I've been 5 years seizure-free after undergoing brain surgery in 2020. However, not a day goes by where I'm not worried about experiencing another seizure, and it's exhausting. I've been on Keppra for over 8 years and thankfully I've had a positive reaction to it. Thanks for raising awareness, and it's comforting hearing other people's stories. Aoife, thank you for getting in touch.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.